Audio reading for personal listening, to book of, Francisco Candido Xavier, by the Spirit. The Messengers, Life in the Spirit World. Numbers read are mainly page numbers, and footnotes are mostly omitted here. Headline, at the Messenger Center. The next day, I listened to Narcisa's lengthy, thoughtful comments on my new endeavor, and then headed for the Messenger Center in the Ministry of Communication. The always helpful Tobias went along, in spite of the huge amount of work he still had to do. I was fascinated when we arrived at the group of majestic buildings that comprised the institution's headquarters. The complex was so big that I could have sworn I had come upon what looked like several universities all joined together. Large courtyards filled with groves and gardens invited uplifting inner reflection. Tobias roused me from my enchantment and exclaimed, "The center is huge. This department of our spirit colony performs some very complex activities. Don't think that the buildings we can see from this spot are all there is to the institution. This part contains only the central administration and a few buildings for general teaching and training." 25. But is this enormous organization restricted only to transmitting messages? I asked curiously. My companion smiled and explained, "Don't get the idea that this is all just some type of postal service. The center trains spirits to become living letters of rescue and assistance to other spirits who are suffering in the umbral, on Earth's surface and in the darkness." "Did you actually think that so much work was just meant for broadcasting news? Broaden your outlook. Our service here is a copy of the type that is being carried out in the most diverse spirit cities of the higher planes. Many, many spirits are trained here to spread hope and consolation, and to provide instruction and counsel in the various arenas of the planet's evolution. I don't mean just invisible emissaries, however. We also train tightly knit groups for reincarnation, and mediums and instructors leave here by the hundreds every year. Those who will be involved in giving spiritual comfort are trained by our messenger center and are sent to the incarnate realms in considerable numbers." "Really?" I said in surprise. "According to what you're saying, their work of providing spiritual enlightenment should have made a lot of headway in the world by now." Tobias gave me an odd look, smiled serenely and explained, "My dear André, you haven't considered the fact that this preparation in and of itself doesn't mean they'll be successful. Thousands of qualified messengers leave here, but the ones who actually succeed are rare indeed. Some manage to accomplish their task partially, but most fail completely. Real service is not just an idea, it involves effort, without which the work can neither begin nor prevail. Ranks of mediums and instructors leave here for the physical world with special training because benefactors in the higher realms need selfless, altruistic mediums in order to enhance humankind's redemption. But when these messengers forget their missionary spirit and their dedication to their fellow beings, they usually become worthless instruments. Just as there are plows and farmers, there are mediums and mediumship, doctrinal instructors and doctrine. A farmer may own an excellent plow, but if he lacks the desire to use it, the only thing the plow will produce is rust. The same applies to psychic faculties and great knowledge. Mediums may be endowed with a very powerful mediumistic ability, but if they cannot see beyond their own interests, they will completely fail at their assigned task. Believe me, my dear friend, all constructive work carries with it its corresponding struggle." 7 footnote. The umbrella situated between heaven and earth, a dolorous region of darkness, created and cultivated by the generally rebellious and indolent, insane and sick human mind. Those who endure the hardships and setbacks of the front lines are very rare indeed. An overwhelming percentage of mediums avoid facing the heavy gunfire. Countless workers retreat just at the moment when the task offers the most valuable opportunity. Quite impressive, I thought. I find that truly amazing. I never imagined that such messengers were prepared here for life in the physical realm. "Ah, my friend," exclaimed Tobias with a smile, Did you really think that the work of doing the good could amount to automatically going through the motions? On earth, our spiritual sight tends to get tarnished by outward expressions of worship and religious activity, leading us to believe we can resolve any problem by assuming a prayer-like posture. However, getting down on one's knees doesn't resolve the fundamental questions of the spirit, nor does the greatest spiritual growth entail merely worshipping the Divine One. The truth is that every act of humility and love is holy and worthy of respect, and there's no doubt that the Lord will grant us His blessings for it. Nonetheless, we have to remember that we are responsible for maintaining and keeping the vessel clean enough to receive such blessings. So, we do not prepare mere postal clerks at this center, but spirits who have become Jesus' living letters to incarnate humankind. At least that is the program as defined by our spirit administration. I fell silent, pondering the grandeur of the lesson. After a long pause, my companion proceeded, because we are almost all still linked to a long history of heinous wrongdoings that have deformed our personalities, few of us succeed. In each new life of incarnate endeavor, we believe much more in the demeaning tendencies of our past than in the divine potential of the present, a fact that always has negative implications for the future. Even so, that is how we proceed there. We cling to evil and forget the good, sometimes foolishly interpreting our problems as forms of punishment, whereas for those of us who have eyes to see, every obstacle offers a priceless opportunity for growth. We came to an enormous enclosure. Hundreds of spirits were pouring into the large building. We ascended the stairs in lively conversation. The features of the marvelous atrium impressed me with their imposing beauty. Varieties of flowers, previously unknown to me, adorned the porticos, spreading vivid colors and delectable fragrances. Breaking my enchantment, Tobias explained, the various groups of trainees are heading for their classes. Let's look for an Isitu in the teacher's department. We went down vast hallways, encountering veritable crowds of spirits involved in animated conversation while looking for their classrooms. We found our obliging friend from the previous evening as part of a small group that seemed to be involved in a very discreet conversation. He embraced us serenely with a smile. 28. Well, he said, I've been looking forward to our new student since early this morning. Tobias explained that he was in a great hurry, so Anisita responded, Andre will be under my care from now on. Go back in peace. I was filled with emotion as I said goodbye to my companion. Noticing my natural timidity, Anisita asked an assistant, call Vicente for me, would you? And turning back to me, he explained, Vicente has been my only medical trainee until now. He'll put you together because of your professional affinity. Less than 3 minutes passed before Vicente was standing in front of us. Vicente, said Anisito matter-of-factly, this is Andre Luis, our new co-worker. He used to be a doctor like yourself. I believe you will feel at ease with each other because you share the same background. Vicente embraced me, showing how pleased he was, and after encouraging me with beautiful, stimulating words, he asked our guide, when should we meet up with you for today's studies? Anisito thought for a moment and replied, explain the rules to our new candidate and join us for instructions right after noon. Headline, Vicente's story, I couldn't possibly express how happy I was with my newfound friendship. Vicente had a very peaceful looking face. It displayed an expression of intelligence and lucidity, and radiated affection and goodness, sensitivity and understanding. He told me he was overjoyed at having found a fellow physician, and in a show of great fraternal kindness, he arranged a room for me conveniently close to his. He was my first colleague from my old profession. He too had recently arrived from the spheres of Earth, and he was the first with whom I felt a more direct connection. We freely exchanged ideas about the surprises that we had encountered since our arrival. We talked about the problems resulting from worldly misconceptions, the myopia of the planet's limited medicinal science, and the profound and fascinating issues surrounding spirit medicine. Although Vicente had not yet made any visits to the incarnate plane in a service capacity, He had an extraordinary admiration for Aniceto, and brought me up to date on the invaluable studies they had delved into together. He was full of enthusiastic ideas. In a little over an hour, our friendship had become like the sentiment of two brothers who had been united by spiritual ties for a long, long time. My new companion had won my boundless trust. Displaying great tact, he asked about my situation regarding my family, and I responded with a brief account of my unusual experience when I had learned of my widow's second marriage. I told my story as explicitly as possible and became quite emotional. With each culminating particular of what had occurred, I intentionally slowed down my account, emphasizing my former sufferings and relating seemingly insurmountable adversities. Vicente smiled now and then as he listened in silence. When I finished my moving account, he placed his right hand on my shoulder and said, "You mustn't think you were unfortunate and misunderstood. You should realize, my dear André, that you were actually quite fortunate." "What do you mean?" "Your Zelia respected you as a husband to the last of your days, and a second marriage is not at all surprising in such circumstances. In my case, however, things were much worse." Given my understandable surprise, my new friend continued, "Let me explain." He thought for a few seconds, as if he were putting his memories in order, and then proceeded, "You can't imagine how intense a dream of love my marriage was. Soon after receiving my professional diploma at age 25, I married Rosalinda. I was radiant with the happiness. I brought my wife not only into a comfortable and secure financial situation but also into the treasures of my love and devotion. My happiness knew no bounds. In a short time, two little children enriched our happy home. My sense of well-being was inexpressible. Because of my bank reserves, I didn't have to specialize in clinical work, but devote myself passionately to the laboratory instead. Because of my propensity for that type of work, it wasn't long before I gained the trust of many colleagues and various study centers, which resulted in increased research opportunities and glowing results. Rosalinda was my primary and most capable coworker. From time to time, she got bored handling test tubes, but she was able to repress such little annoyances for the sake of our domestic happiness. She seemed to understand me completely. In my eyes, she was a dedicated mother and a flawless wife. Well, 10 years of conjugal bliss had passed when my brother Eleuterio, an unmarried lawyer somewhat older than myself, decided to settle close by. Rosalinda went out of her way to be attentive to him since he was a member of my family. Eleuterio came into our home as a true brother. Although he actually roomed in a hotel, he took part in our evenings at home, and was always charming and eager to please. From that time on, though, I noticed that my wife began to change little by little. She demanded that I hire an assistant to replace her at work, claiming that our little ones needed more dedicated, maternal attention. I happily consented. After all, it was an arrangement that was important for our children's welfare. However, Rosalinda's transformation started to become more noticeable. She began to avoid the laboratory altogether, where we had happily embraced so many times after seeing our most important experiments crowned with success. She preferred to go to the cinema or shopping with Eleuterio. 25. I was greatly saddened by this, but I had no reason to doubt my brother's behavior. He had always been considerate at home, although he was overbearing and egotistical in his professional life. My home life, which had always been so happy, had now become one of rather bitter loneliness, which I tried to evade with persistent, honest work. Things continued like that, when an odd transformation altered my life. A small pustule in one of my nostrils had never given me any trouble, but after I injured it slightly, it turned into an extremely serious condition. In just a few hours, it broke out in septicemia. My colleagues gathered around my sickbed in a veritable assembly. However, all their care was useless. Their best attempts at helping me were completely useless, and I realized that my end was rapidly approaching. Rosalinda and Eleuterio appeared to be grief-stricken, and even now I can see their looks of dismay at the moment when the mist of death shrouded my corporeal eyes. At this point, Vicente remained quiet for a long while, as if focusing on his most painful memories. Then he continued, less enthusiastically, "After a period of pitiful troubles in the lower zones, and after I had recovered in Nosola, I discovered the whole truth. Upon returning to my home, I was in for a big surprise. Rosalinda was now married to Eleuterio. Our stories are almost identical," I exclaimed. "Not really," he protested with a smile. And he continued, "Another surprise rent my heart. Only when I returned to my home did I learn that I had been the victim of a hateful crime. My own brother had devised the deviously wicked plot. My wife and he had fallen hopelessly in love and had yielded to the temptations of the flesh. Divorce was not legal, even. If the law had allowed it, it would have been scandalous for Rosalinda to leave me to publicly live with her brother-in-law. However, Eleuterio remembered that she and I had worked in the laboratory together, and he suggested that she infect me with a certain microbial culture, which he took upon himself to obtain as soon as possible. My poor wife wasted no time, and taking the opportunity while I was asleep, she injected the deadly virus into the tiny, slightly opened pustule. And that's my story in a nutshell. I was dumbstruck." "And those two criminals?" I asked. Vicente smiled slightly and said, "Rosalinda and Eleuterio are apparently living together quite happily. They are dedicated materialists, and are enjoying their great fortune and high social standing in the transitory world. But what about justice?" I inquired. "Look, Andre," he calmly explained, "everything comes in its time, the good as well as the bad. First the seed, then the fruit." Noticing how sad I looked, Vicente concluded, "Let's not talk about this anymore. It's almost time for class. Let's attend to what's really important and help our loved ones still far away in the earthly circles. Don't be too concerned. In order to produce fruit, the tree doesn't complain about its dead leaves. For us at this time, my friend, evil is the mere result of ignorance and nothing more." Receiving instructions, Anicetto was waiting for us in the large, welcoming auditorium filled with rows and rows of assistants. Men and women of apparently different ages seemed to be lost in thought, but displayed expectation and interest, nevertheless. "Today," explained our guide, addressing Vicente in particular, "we are going to hear a lecture by Telesfera, a former worker in the Ministry of Communication. He has requested the presence of all trainees involved in the communication efforts between us and our incarnate brothers and sisters." We sat down and made ourselves comfortable. A few minutes later, Telesfera entered the auditorium to the harmonious vibrations of general congeniality. Anicetto and other instructors took their places next to him around a stately table, where others in charge of the assembly were also seated. After greeting the audience, Telesfera offered his wishes of peace, and encouraged us to give testimonies regarding our redemptive experiences. Then he proceeded to the main subject that had brought him there. "Now," he said authoritatively yet simply, "we will address the need for representatives from our colony to do some work down on the earth. There are fellow spirits here who failed to complete their worthily conceived objectives, and there are other brothers and sisters who wish to take part in tasks that involve our area of responsibility. We are of course referring to communication's painstaking activities on the physical plane. Right here in this auditorium there are a large number of Nosola's co-workers who failed in their missions of mediumship and instruction, as well as many others who are now preparing themselves for just such trials in the corporeal sphere. Our division has been involved in promoting a large operation designed to aid those of our incarnate and discarnate brothers and sisters, who have proven to be incapable of functioning beyond the terrestrial plane. We are faced with an enormous task. We need to disseminate new teachings for preparing those who live here in our colony, taking present and future endeavors and achievements into consideration. It is vital to help those who are courageously facing the planet's profound changes. The fundamental changes of life on Earth have caught most people completely off guard as far as eternal realities are concerned. The human mind is becoming increasingly accepting and open to contact with the invisible realms, within which it functions and moves. This is a type of evolutionary inevitability. We desire to, indeed we must, aid incarnate individuals. Nevertheless, vast waves of misunderstanding are working against our fraternal cooperation. We are not only speaking of actions resulting from ignorance and perversity. Spiritualism itself has arrayed many, many forces against us, and certain Christian teachings are fighting against us as if we are not actually in accord with the Divine Master. The Church of Rome regards our work as diabolical. The various Lutheran and Reformed churches are persecuting our well-intentioned efforts. And there are many other highly educated spiritualist schools that denounce our influence because they think that humans can become perfect overnight, instantly redeemed by a stroke of the will and without any effort at progress. In the arena of our understanding of life, however, we cannot condemn these groups for their present lack of understanding. Roman Catholicism has its reasons for being, and they are essential. Protestantism deserves our respect. The spiritualist schools possess noteworthy teachings. Every religious expression is sacred and every uplifting act of spiritual education is holy per se. Thus, what we are actually faced with is a lack of understanding by those devoted to the good. And this is a bitter trial for all of us sincere workers, because, after all, we are not doing individualistic work, but are fostering a liberating movement of human consciousness on behalf of the world's religious ideas. Clergy and theologians of organized religion and philosophy have not yet perceived that, just like the human soul, the spirit of revelation is progressive. Religious concepts evolve along with the mind of the individual. Many churches do not as yet understand that we ought not spread the belief that unfortunate individuals are doomed to eternal torment. Instead, we must proclaim the certainty of there being hellish people who create their own personal hells. Nonetheless, we cannot waste time criticizing the stubbornness of others. We have complex and widespread services of our own to attend to. And, as we were saying, with every passing day, Earth's humankind rubs elbows, so to speak, with the invisible sphere of lower vibrations surrounding them on all sides. But we realize that an overwhelming percentage of Earth's inhabitants have not prepared themselves for today's evolutionary events. Highly agonizing conflicts are occurring in the human arena. Science is progressing at a dizzying rate on the planet, and yet, as the afflictions of the body are overcome, those of the soul increase. The newspapers are full of wonderful stories about material progress. Wondrous secrets of nature are being discovered in the realms of the sea, the land and the air, but statistics on human crime are frightening. The murders of war reveal levels of wickedness far beyond those known in former times. Homicides, suicides, marital tragedies, emotional misery, strikes, subversive revolutionary impulses, the thirst for degrading experimentation, sexual unrest, unknown diseases and insanity are invading human homes. In no country is there enough spiritual training for physical comfort. Nevertheless, such comfort tends to increase naturally. Human beings are exerting more and more control over the exterior landscape of their planetary home, but they do not know themselves. When the body is heeded, however, it will reveal the needs of the soul, and we are now witnessing individuals being overwhelmed with serious problems not only due to their own deficiencies but also due to their close psychic proximity to the vibratory sphere of the millions of discarnates who cling to the planet's surface, anxious to renew the existence they formerly held in disdain and without the slightest concern for the designs of the Eternal One. Strictly speaking, we understand that communications work should be carried out only on the plane of divine inspiration for the earthly realms, that is, from the higher to the lower. But how are we to reach the millions of criminals and infirm individuals in the visible and invisible zones of human experience? Through mere ritualistic, outward worship, as the Church of Rome proposes, through faith alone, as the Reformation churches claim, through a mere affirmation of the will, as certain spiritualist schools hold? We cannot limit our opinions to a unilateral view of the problem, however. We agree that faith, will and reverence toward the Father are basic expressions of divine realization within the human being, but we cannot forget that labor is the fundamental need of every spirit. Let our other brothers and sisters continue with their theological speculations, but let us, you and I, view undertaking the Lord's work as an indispensable duty. Humankind at this time is like a large collective organism, whose cells, that is, individual humans, are involved in mutual instability in the worldwide process of readjustment and redemption. Those who work with us have seen the extent of the complications with which the human mind struggles. Criminals cling to other criminals, the sick associate with the sick. We need to offer the world instruments which are adequate for correcting the spirit, and which bestow upon our incarnate brothers and sisters a greater understanding of the Spirit of Christ. But to do this, we need faithful co-workers, who pay no mind to conditions, compensation or arguments, but who are interested in the sublimity of sacrifice and self-denial for the Lord. Telesphora paused, and directing a penetrating glance at the audience, said in a raised voice, "Let those who do not wish to serve look for something else to do. The Ministry of Communication cannot put up with wasting time on feeble experimentation, without doing serious harm to unwary co-workers. In the other ministries, the assignment of workers characterizes with great precision all those who collaborate with the Divine Master. Here, however, more than just workers, we need servants who have a willing desire to help others." He took another long pause, during which I noticed how strong of an impression he had made on the audience members, who were looking at each other in inexpressible amazement. Profound warnings. "Brothers and sisters," continued Telesphora, "under the fervor of sacred inspiration, we can hear the heartrending cries of Earth's suffering souls. We need workers who wish to join the evangelical school of selflessness. Ever since Spiritism first began its task of renewing the world, Nosola has sent various groups to work on spreading the doctrine's educative principles. Hundreds of fellow spirits leave here every year, combining their own need of redemption with redemptive service. Nevertheless, we still have not achieved the results we desire. A few workers have enjoyed partial success regarding the tasks assigned to them, but most have failed miserably. Our rescue institutions have set vital relief measures in motion, but to no avail. Very, very few have achieved any success as far as the intricate duties of mediumship and instruction are concerned. Other colonies on our plane are involved in providing services of the same nature, however, once on the other side of the veil, very few incarnates remember the eternal realities. Ignorance dominates the minds of the majority. And ignorance is the mother of all misery, weakness and crime. When clothed in the fluids of the flesh, great instructors become unnerved when confronted with human dissensions, and they seek unwarranted refuge in their own beliefs. They forget that Jesus did not expect human beings to attain his level of magnificent glory. Instead, he came down to the human plane in order to love, teach and serve. He did not expect humans to immediately become like him, rather, he made himself to be like them in order to help them on their Herculean ascent. After a short pause and with a profound gleam in his eye, Telesphora stressed, "If the Divine Master adopted this rule, what are we to say about our own obligations as failed individuals? Let's not concern ourselves with the immense needs of other groups. Let's identify what may be lacking in those connected to us. Around us, personal connection constitutes a broad field of activity for bearing witness. Let us abandon the idea that Earth is a valley of darkness in which we are unfortunately doomed to fail, and let us take refuge in the certainty that the physical realm is a great redemptive workshop. Let us prepare ourselves to work effectively together. Let us forget the mistakes of the past and remind ourselves of our fundamental obligations. The general cause of failure in mediumistic work is the lack of a sense of responsibility and remembrance of the duty to be fulfilled. How many of you here were assisted by generous benefactors who sought to help you, commiserative of your cruel past. How many of you left here filled with enthusiasm after having made prodigious promises?